Welcome to another scintillating version of the Cosmic Weather. It's Kellerly Phipps doing a recording for this Sagittarius full moon that's dominating the skies these days. I was going to switch to a format where I do the Cosmic Weather once a month, but I realized at the beginning of this month, I didn't really talk about the full moon and the energy that's been building up all this month. Just got back from the UAC conference, the United Astrology Conference, down in New Orleans. And it was hot and sticky down there, but I ran into over 1,500 astrologers from over 30 nations. So it was a grand gathering of astrological wisdom with 90 lectures a day. And just, it's like a big, happy family reunion of magi. While I was there, I made a video of... at the request of Stephen Forrest and David Cochran and Giselle Terry. Well, it was Stephen's idea. He was talking to David about their different forms of astrology. And they were literally learning a lot from each other. So they decided to stop the conversation and said, "We'll get Kelly." So they called me and said, "Let's meet at Giselle Terry's room and do a three-way conversation about astrological appreciation." And turned out to be a really in-depth hour and a half dialogue. And or actually there was three people there, so it was a trialogue. And you can check it out on my YouTube channel at Kelly Lee Phipps. The full moon we have up is interesting because this Sagittarius full moon, as always, is asking us if we're fulfilled in the life affairs of the house that it falls in within our natal charts. So you gotta, it's falling at 14 degrees, 13 minutes of Sag. So you got to go look at your chart and see where, you know, about 14, 15 degrees Sag is. It's the 15th degree, Sabian symbol-wise. And Sagittarius, the middle of Sag, is the Aries decan, which has to do with courage through action. Sagittarius itself is about faith through divine inspiration. Aries is the archetypal plot motif of survival, which is overlaid by decan over this Sagittarius theme of a quest. So really the full moon in Sag is about a vision quest. I mean, if there's any other time of the year that's perfect for the symbolism, it's when the full moon illuminating vision falls in the sign that archetypally has to do with the plot motif of the quest. So this is a vision quest time. And because in the sky, Venus is transiting the sun, which means it's making an interior conjunction. It's, in other words, Venus is lining up with the sun between us and Earth, which I released another podcast the other day. I just put my friend Andrew Smith up there talking about the Venus transit and breaking it down. He has some great graphics too on his note on the Facebook page. So just look for Andrew Smith as one of my friends and join him and partake of his excellent and in-depth astrological wisdom. And one thing he said in the thing that really got me in that write-up was that Venus, when you put the symbol of Venus over the symbol for the sun, you know, if you line the circles up, it looks like a little person with a halo, you know. And he was talking about the sort of Christ-like forgiveness energy of Venus in relationships. And also, in my new book on the Tao of Astrology, I work a lot with what I call mythic aspects, when planets get together, forming a different mythic theme. And so Venus and the sun, when they get together, it rhymes with the base goddess of Aphrodite. So even though we call Venus the planet, when it gets with the sun, there's a sort of a shining Venus, you know. And that relates back to Aphrodite. Aphros meaning sea foam, Dite meaning she who shines. So when the sun and Venus are in strong aspect, there's a Aphrodite beauty that's resonant in the character or in the times and the events that we're in. So she who shines in the sea foam. It's hard to say it. But the thing is Aphrodite's themes mythically are love, beauty, pleasure, procreation. Her symbols are doves, myrtles, sparrows, swans, even horses. Maybe that explains why lots of young women like horses. or unicorns, for that matter. But the other goddess that I relate to the Sun Venus myth is the goddess Hebe, spelled H-E-B-E. She was the goddess of youth. She was the cupbearer of the gods before Ganymede took over. And actually, her mythological symbolism is all wrapped up in the idea of pardoning, you know, someone, forgiveness, which rhymes with what Andrew was saying about Venus. So that's fascinating. And on the dark side, you know, Aphrodite can be vain, ill-tempered, easily offended, you know. So you have to watch for that under this. And in general, these the Venusian force is about love, about relationship. It's the urge to socialize and the need for affection, which happens a lot in relationships. Because you're always hanging out, socializing, and expressing affection. Venus has to do with our tastes, our feminine essence. We all have a feminine side, even us tough guys. intimacy, aesthetics, so artistic creativity, and in general, serenity, you know, how you find tranquility. The two signs that Venus is associated with, that it guides, I'm using the term guidance these days, as opposed to saying rulership, kind of over the monarchical way of doing astrology, where this rules that and that rules that, which just it just implies hierarchy. And I've long been in love with the vision of the cosmos being about holarchy. As opposed to levels of command, we have levels of containment. And so I guess we could use the term governs, but I really like the term guidance. So the two signs that Venus guides in her dispositorship, I like the word dispositorship because disponere means take energy from one place, stick it in another. So are Taurus and Libra. Venus guides Taurus, the great Earth Mother, and intimate Libra, the sign of the artist, the lover, the diplomat. So the two emotions that are related to these signs are fulfillment, Taurus, and intimacy, Libra. These are the base emotions. So you've got fulfillment mixing with intimacy. And that right there is a dead giveaway that Venus is about love. Because when I'm talking about fulfillment, I'm talking about relaxation, fulfillment leading to ultimate tranquility. When I talk about intimacy, I talk about harmony at the highest level. And just the feeling of being at peace. Peacefulness. I feel peaceful. You know those days when you just feel peaceful. And that's what Libra and Taurus are all about, you know. Feeling fulfilled and feeling peaceful. On the dark side, the Libra shadow could be despondency, discord, anguish. Taurus can be reluctance, resistance, stagnation. So under this Venus transit, we have to look about, and you know, it's aligning with the Sun, which is symbolic of your path of self-realization. Your urge to radiate your unique, special, charismatic light and the need for self-expression. So, in relation to self-realization and expression and radiation of your beautiful light, we're asking ourselves right now into this full moon vision quest, Sagittarius full moon, how we want to sort of bring that about. How we want to find fulfillment and intimacy. And sort of, you know, so that we don't have to get in those states where we feel anguished and stagnant, you know. So you have to ask yourself the question, where are you stagnant right now, especially in relationships or issues of feeding yourself, you know, fulfillment. Not just food, I'm talking about like all levels, emotional fulfillment, physical fulfillment, mental fulfillment, archetypal fulfillment. And, of course, spiritual fulfillment. the quest of Taurus and its plot motif is one of acquisition. How can we gain this sort of tool, this equipment we need to do our quest. And the Libra flow is about love. So it's about, when you combine these two, it's the acquisition of love. On the shadow side, it's the breaking away from love, you know, like the unacquisitioning of love. So you can look back over your, you know, the 8-year transits of Venus whenever they happen. I think they happen in Gemini and Sagittarius. When they do happen every, I think the next one's like 2117 or something, when they happen back to back every 8 years. Because not all the times does Venus cross the face of the sun when it makes its transit. But when it does it back to back, 8 years and 8 years, that signifies that it's like coming in strong. So you have to ask yourself, what were you doing back in 2004 in terms of the acquisition of love? And, you know, something will, some pattern, you'll see a pattern if you go back to 2004, you go back to 1996, you go back to 8 years before that, because Venus every 8 years makes this transit of the sun, or potential transit of the sun, but it happens in Gemini, if it happens at all, or Sagittarius. So the thing is, it's all caught up with the archetype of spontaneous inspiration, you know, where Gemini has to do with exchange, and Sagittarius has to do with meaning. So it's like exchange of meaning is happening during these times. And we have, when I look back at mine, I remember in 1996, me and my first love, Andrea, broke up in high school. It was about the 11th grade. And that was a sad parting. But, you know, things change, people evolve, they want to move into new life phases. And then 1996, that's when Arianne's mom and I first broke up. So I definitely experienced an end of a marriage, my first marriage. And then 2004 came around, and I was dating a woman named Lena, and we broke up that year. So I met her in 2003. But yeah, so every 8 years I had a major relationship that really impacted me on a spiritual level. And so it's interesting that this Venus transit here in 2012, I come into it with no relationship. And actually, I feel like I've been tying up loose ends in relationships. It turns out Alicia, the lady I went to meet on my bike trip across the Rocky Mountains in Canada, she turned out to be at the UAC conference. She was working in the bookstore. And I was like, Alicia. So we hung out, and we had a nice dance on the dance floor at the end of the conference, and we touched each other on the heart, and we promised that no matter what, we'll always be friends for life, you know? So it felt like really good closure, you know? So our relationship ended before we even got started. But, you know, so just tying up loose ends with the feminine for me has been my theme in relationships. And so you have to ask yourself how you're doing with that. So I definitely feel ready for a new season of love, you know, a deeper kind of love that definitely churns souls into a deeper awareness. And life partner issues are up for everyone, most likely. Especially if this is the end of the world. The Mayan thing. We're all going to have new partners soon. Nah, just kidding. But, yeah, so Hebe, the cupbearer of the gods, is asking us, how can she fill our cup? And she's the goddess of youth. She's the beautiful young woman who attended the throne of Zeus, you know. Hopefully Zeus didn't mess around with her. I don't think there's a myth where Zeus gets with his cupbearer. But the other mythological theme that relates to the Sun-Venus mythic joining are the Graces, or the Charites they were called in Greek. But they're the Graces. Thalia was the grace of cheer and festivity. Euphrosyne was the grace of joy and mirth. And then there was Aglaia, or Glaia, who was splendor, the grace of splendor and beauty. So you have cheer, joy, and beauty all coming together. And the graces have to do with charm, beauty, nature, fertility, productivity. So ask yourself, how can you invoke the graces in your life for this next 8 years as Venus makes its passage in front of the sun, creating that halo effect that Andrew pointed out. The other thing that we have going on at this time period, and one of the main reasons I wanted to do a cosmic weather, was because every 8 years Venus, you know, makes its five alignments with the sun, forming what's called the star, you know, the star, the where we derive the quintile aspect from. Hence, quintiles being all about creativity and tapping into higher orders of intelligence. But that's the angle that Venus beauty bestows beauty, you know. So the other thing, though, that I was going to talk about is that Jupiter's moving into a new sign, the archetype of Gemini. And so Gemini is, you know, traditionally the archetype of the messenger, the trickster, the eternal youth, the storyteller, the teacher. Gemini is all about conversation through spontaneity. And Jupiter's bringing its divine inspiration into that whirlwind of versatility, curiosity, and variety. And wherever that's happening in your chart, you'll feel it on a really big level. As soon as it moves into Gemini on June 11th, you'll start to feel it in the whole sign experience of the spiritual and archetypal levels. So when a planet moves into a new sign, it immediately activates on the spiritual and archetypal levels. What I mean by archetypal, I mean what the element fire symbolizes. Visions, plot motifs, mythic stories, dreams. The astral plane, basically. The plane of stars, the astra. So the fire of the heavens. So when Jupiter moves into Gemini, we're all going to feel like, wow, where is this happening? Well, for me, it's in my sixth house, but Gemini is in my seventh house. So I got to look at that and say, it's not going to get to 19 degrees. I think it's going to go up to like 18 degrees and go backwards, retrograde. Because, you know, Jupiter spends a good year in a sign. So this is kind of like Jupiter's birthday when it goes into a new sign. It's like, ha, I have a new theme. And the theme, when I was on my bike trip, it was in Aries, conjunct my nadir. So I was like down there changing my home. And but it was like this heroic quest to cross the Rocky Mountains on a bike. And then when I got to Taurus last June, that's when I came back to Boulder. So I've actually been in Boulder for a year now on June 11th. Because I remember that's when my plane landed last time. And Jupiter was moving into Taurus. And I was, what, stabilizing Taurus, you know, gaining a sense of groundedness, responsibility, focus, you know. Good old earth sign pragmatics. And now that I got this sort of foundation under me, where I have like an astrology guild here in Boulder, the membership is growing. I'm finishing the Tao of astrology, which is very Taurus oriented, you know. It's all about going with the flow and bending with the wind and all the principles of Wu Wei, actionless action, which actually you could translate that as graceful action. So talk about the graces coming in to help me finish this book. And Jupiter moving to Gemini, people were like, why don't you finish the book by the conference? I mean, I could have rushed and finished it by the conference and made sacrifices, but I really want to just let it take its time. It's called the Tao of Astrology. Yes, I've been waiting 12 years working on ideas and stuff, but now I'm working on it every day, you know, pouring my heart and soul into it. It's my prime focus. I won't even let myself go to another project until I finish this one. So it's going to get done this year and probably published in the fall. My favorite season, being that I have the moon in the quadrant of the fall, the lower right quadrant. I have a theory that wherever the moon sits is indicative of your favorite season or what you feel like you need or love. So if your moon's on the descendant or in the sixth, fifth, and fourth house, that's the fall sector of the chart. And of course, the first, second, third, that's the winter section of the chart. And in the 12th, 11th, and 10th, that's when things come back alive. It's springtime. And then the 9th, 8th, and 7th, those are the, that would be the summer. So where's your moon and what's your favorite season? Let me know if it works for you. So we got the three main things. We got the full moon in Sag asking, are you fulfilled in the house that contains the full moon? And on a whole sign level, you got to look at the house by signs. So like, so for instance, I'm Sagittarius rising, 18, 19 degrees. And so, but the full moon is at 14 degrees. So it looks like it's in my 12th house. On a whole sign level, I have to ask myself, am I fulfilled in my body, in my basic form, you know, who I am, in my self-expression, the ascendant, governs all those kinds of ideas. The instinct of actualization, you know, surviving in the body. I like to call it the house of soul embodiment. It's your appearance, your behavior, your persona. And, you know, the ancients used to call the ascendant the horoskopos, the view of the birth hour. Horo meaning hour and skopos to view. So the ascendant used to be called the horoskopos. It's funny that now we use the word horoscope for the sun sign, where we relate it to the sun sign. But originally it was meant to be related to the ascendant. And having the moon at 14 degrees, it's above my ascendant in the 12th house, visually. So the way I look at it is on the spiritual and archetypal level, it's a first house full moon. So how am I doing on my spiritual appearance, my archetypal behavior and persona and self-expression? I feel pretty good after releasing that video with called Building Bridges in Astrology. You can also search for that on YouTube. I felt like I was doing a great humanitarian service for astrology. Activating my North Node in Aquarius, you know, doing something for the tribe. And there was definitely a warm glow in my heart when I was able to put that video up. And I have a whole bunch of videos coming. I just wrote a new article for your astrological edification about quadrant orientation. You notice I alluded to it with the whole seasonal expressions of each of the quadrants. Because we always talk about hemispheric emphasis or quadrant emphasis. And it actually comes down to there's an interesting relationship between the Sun-Moon polarity, the Venus-Mars polarity, and then the Saturn-Jupiter polarity on a philosophical, cultural level. So check out that article. Just go to divineinspirationastrology.com and hit articles, and it's the top one. Quadrant orientation. I'm going to make a video about it soon. My first Tao of Astrology educational video. What's happening in the sky under this full moon? You know, normally a full moon is about vision, illumination, seeing with full awareness the fruits and efforts that you began back when the new moon was in Sagittarius. And that would have been around November, December. So what was going on around November, December? For me, I was gearing up to go travel to Europe and, you know, just really feeling like starting the book, you know, in terms of its final expression and in published form. And now to this full moon, I'm pretty happy with where it is, you know. I finally got the vision for it. I'm cranking away at the chapters, and it feels like every day is a day of divine inspiration. So usually full moons, 45 days after the full moons, when things come to their flowering phase, and during that next 45 days, it comes to its, you know, you get to experience the ripeness of the cycle, the fruit, the fruition phase. And so that's why I figure between, you know, 45 days and 90 days, the book will be done, because that'll be the fruition phase. So, lots going on in my world. Let me hear about what's going on in your world. You can always send me an email at kellyleafhips@gmail.com. But the main thing is that about this configuration in the heavens is that the planet Mars is making an interesting angle, because it's squaring both the full moon and Venus. And when that happens, it's like, whoa, what's going on? We have a situation where the planet of warfare and pioneering and drive and desire, which is going to be spending total 7 months in Virgo. In other words, Mars is kind of acting like Jupiter in a sense. Well, almost. Jupiter's a 12-month cycle. Except for the fact that Mars is super dry in terms of when it wants to break connections and form distinctions and compete and say, this is me, that's you, stay away. Whereas Jupiter's more inclusive. It has the power of bringing things together. But they're both very hot planets. So Mars in Virgo is a fiery craftsman. It's like Hephaestus, Vulcan, down there in his forge, crafting away at his items of magic and enchantment, his artifacts. So imagine there's an artificer, which is like an ancient engineer, pounding away at some metal down in the forge in the house that contains your Mars. I mean, look at mine. Mine's in the ninth house, which is governs seeing the big picture, philosophy, religion, bringing things together, broadcasting, publishing. Here I am working on my life's work. So I figure as Mars moves across the bit heaven, there's going to be a nice thrust there. But yeah, the fact that Mars is squaring the moon brings up the huntress energy of Artemis, the warrior woman. And then Venus square the Mars is the energy of Eros, you know. Whenever you have Venus and Mars together, it creates a lot of erotic energy. And so there's also an ancient goddess where we get the word hedonistic from, Hedone, who was the goddess of sensual pleasure. Anias has to do with this archetype too, who was the founder of Rome. But this Eros energy, you know, Eros and Psyche, the myth of Eros and Psyche, it's what happens with Venus and Mars together. It's like suffering for your love, you know? So there's a lot of erotic energy in the air. There's a lot of like animalistic wildness in the air. And then of course there's the full moon, you know, the tension of opposites, the yin and the yang facing off. It's an interesting cycle because, you know, when the moon is full, the moon is in its full radiance and light. It's occupying like the sun side. And the sun's over there holding down the cycle, so it's over there at the yin, the bottom of the cycle, still. So in essence, they're like facing off with each other, but from each other's positions. Because, you know, the moon governs the invisible dark mystery of where the new moon began. And the sun would be related archetypally and ontologically with the great full moon energy, you know, the full vision, the light, the sun. Because you can see the full reflection of the sun in the face of the moon. So it's a beautiful cycle, but they're inverse to each other. When the moon governs digestion, the sun governs the cardiovascular system, cardia, heart. So you have to ask yourself, how are you doing between your cardiovascular system and your digestive system? What's your nutrition like? You know, the moon has a great key to your nutrition. And so does Venus as well. Venus is about tastes as well. So you got Venus and Mars here. Under this full moon, what I had to, after I got to work out at the gym today, I had to go and get me some Thai food. spicy Thai food. And I'm kind of overeating a bunch of starches and carbs, so I just said, hold the rice, no potatoes, I don't want to eat potatoes or rice. Just a big giant bowl of creamy, hot, vegan, yellow curry with you know, because that's the one that doesn't have the fish sauce and doesn't have shrimp paste in the curry mix. And, you know, just mixed vegetables and extra broccoli and mushrooms. It's so good. I just love dipping a broccoli into a giant bowl of creamy, yellow, spicy Thai food and just letting it simmer in your mouth. The taste is amazing. Anyway, This T square in the heavens is making me hungry. You got Mars, fire, squaring Venus. So it's like my tastes were on fire this morning. Now Mars is moving on finally. I think in the beginning, the first week of July, it's going to move into Libra. And so that's going to light a fire under a lot of people to get moving in the right direction with their dreams and initiate new relationships too. And a new phase of negotiation. So if you have any negotiations that need to be done after this craftsman Vulcan forge phase is over, you can move on down into it, you know, with Mars going in there in July. So other things happening under this next phase here, So June 4th, today, the full moon, we have the Venus squaring off with Mars. So the passion of Eros is being released into the new sphere. And then, of course, the Sun transit to Venus, which has been happening all day. Peaking, I think, around 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, according to SolarFire. That's when they're in exact conjunction. And that's coming pretty soon. That's like an hour from now, because it's 6:40 here where I'm recording. Saturn is quincunx to Ceres on June 6th. So that asks us for financial restraint and organization, planning around our resources, being that the grain goddess is making adjustments with the planet of restraint. So make wise financial decisions during this time. With all this erotic passion running around and wildness of Moon Mars, there's apt to be some impulsive shopping going on. the quincunx is an angle of seemingly irreconcilable differences, requiring adjustments through ingenuity. So how can you use ingenuity to bring together these two forces? Well, they kind of go together anyway, because, you know, it's the full moon, and the moon is a goddess energy, and if Saturn's working its way, well, the moon-Saturn mythic archetypal theme is the grain goddess, you know? Demeter, the agricultural goddess. Also, Ilithyia, which is the goddess of childbearing, and the Earth Mother, which was once called Cybele, C-Y-B-E-L-E. Those are the three mythic themes that relate to Moon Saturn. So we got a full moon with Saturn and Saturn square quincunxing with Ceres. So there's like some aches and pains and frustrations around issues of self-worth, abundance. You might even feel it in your bones a little bit, June 6th. Mercury goes into Cancer, June 7th. So the planet of communication is entering the archetype of emotional sympathy. That's the emotion of Cancer, which is the archetype of the nurturer, the protector, the counselor, the healer, the hearth, the guardian. Cancer has to do with outward moving water. In other words, activating the imagination, creating emotion, expanding compassion, animating rejuvenation, and invigorating heart vision. Or what I once called core sight. So how are you tapping into core sight with Mercury moving into Cancer on June 7th? Next we'll have Sun square to Mars, June 7th. Whenever you get Sun Mars together, it's pretty intense. Because, you know, you get the king and the first knight, and they're hanging out together. And it basically invokes the Aries archetype, the god of war, Aries. Not the sign, Aries, but Aries, A-R-E-S. And also any hero who also had to face hardships, like Orion. I always think of Orion when I see Sun Mars together. And also the winged guardians of the gates of Olympus, Nike and Bia. Nike meaning victory, hence the shoe, and Bia meaning violence or force. So you get Sun Mars, it's like, raw! It's like the male version of wildness, as opposed to the moon to Mars, which would be more like Artemis. Mercury's trining Neptune June 8th. So, you know, Mercury, the urge to think, is making an angle of a creative blending of energies with Neptune, which is the urge for unity. So how can your thinking become more unified, especially in the blending of your creativity and cultivating your talents? It's an alliance through cooperative expression. That's what a trine symbolizes. So Mercury's the need for communication. Neptune's the need for transcendence. So there's there's this beautiful alliance through cooperative expression between the need for communication and the need for transcendence. So on June 8th, the portals are open for transcendent communication. I mean, a prayer you say that day will make it right into the heart of the gods. So be open to that on June 8th. It's one of those make-a-wish days. And we'll give you 3 wishes. Why not? But be careful what you wish for, because every wish has consequences. Just imagine when you wish for something. I think it's funny that we live in a society where everybody's focused on, we should pray about this. you know, the whole Christian background theme of America here is prayer has been like a big thing. And even in the Eastern sense of just, you know, being in the zone, attaining samadhi or satori, being in a bliss state, this is seen as a lot of times as wishful thinking by scientific rationalist mechanistic types, you know. So we have this weird dualism in our society between what's real and what's fake. And the problem with this, though, is that the realist, the guy who sits down and tells you that's unscientific, whatever your, you know, your prayer or your even astrology, will be the first guy to be like, oh, let's pray about this. Or go to church, you know, and pretend to be praying or something. But the theory is that consciousness can have an effect in the world. Now, while consciousness might not have a direct effect, like I can move matter with my brain, although I think that it can penetrate into these realms. I've seen it done, especially in sports, where you just focus your mind and make something happen. And everybody's like, wow, he made something happen. He's on fire. On fire because he's reaching into the fiery astral realms and bringing things together. But yeah, that's the dualism of our society that we're dealing with. On the one hand, everybody wants everything to be scientifically proven. And on the other hand, everybody thinks that we should just go pray about it. Let's pray for those victims. It's like, oh, now we're going to pray. Now we're going to use our consciousness to make a magical effect in the world. And yet yesterday you told me that you don't believe in that stuff. So that's the dichotomy we're dealing with in society. June 9th, Jupiter will be making a septile to Uranus. And if you believe in angels, that's an angelic aspect. 54 point blah, blah, blah degrees. So yeah, just expect unusual opportunities to come your way. Even if it's real simple, just like, you know, you're carrying a bunch of stuff and someone opens a door for you. That's an angel in disguise. There's a couple quintiles going on June 10th. Sun to Uranus, great for creative brilliance. And also Mercury to Mars, great for crafting something. So that's going to be a good writing day for me. I'm like sitting there thinking about that day going like, wow, I could write a whole chapter that day. And that leads up to June 11th when Jupiter goes into Gemini. So Jupiter, which is classically the planet of inspiration and enculturation, because it has to do with exploration, growth, opportunity, perspectives, philosophies. This planet is moving into Gemini. And Gemini archetypally has to do with the emotion of interest, which starts off as curiosity, but can grow to total mental absorption. On the shadow side, it can be preoccupation, distraction, and mischief. So expect an expansion of mischief in the headlines of the news. And expect yourself to be overly distracted for this next year. But if you know that, that's half the battle. If you know that, oh wow, this is a season where this next year we're going to, not just a season, four seasons of being distracted and preoccupied. So if we know that, we can tap into the positive side. And Jupiter can be about total expansion of mental absorption into something. Gemini has to do with the Titaness called Mnemosyne, where we get the word mnemonics and memes, memory. She was the lady of memory, a lady of remembrance, they called her. And Zeus got together with her different nights in a row, and they had the nine muses. Thing, you know, the muses are, there's one for astronomy called Urania. There's one for epic poetry, great novels and stories kind of thing. There's one for erotic poetry, erato. There's one for history, Clio. There's one for dance. There's one for music. So these nine muses are related to Gemini in the sense that Mnemosyne, the Titaness, which has power, the power of authority in speech. That's what she grants. So that relates to Gemini, Gemini being the sign of exchange. So that's one reason I was waiting till after UAC to get my book done, because I don't want to publish my book with Jupiter and Taurus. I want to publish my book with Jupiter and Gemini. Fits my soul better. So That's why I wasn't in any rush to finish it. I was like, look at the timing here, guys. For me, it works better when Jupiter goes into Gemini. And I love Jupiter and Gemini because it's going to be over there making an opposition to my natal Jupiter at 2 degrees Sag from 2 degrees Gemini as we move into June. I'm thinking about going to the rainbow gathering during that time and just meditating and writing my book. You know, no technology, just bring pencils, papers, and research and writing, and that's it. And just work on my book. So, and I'll type it all up when I get home. The same day, June 11th, Mercury's going to square Uranus and oppose Pluto. So, you know, we're leading up to the June 24th 8-degree square between Uranus and individual Aries, the power of the individual, against the power of the corporation, Pluto, in Capricorn, business. So basically, this summer is going to be like the summer of love all over again. Well, actually, the next three summers, really, because Pluto is squaring Uranus the whole time. But this is the first exact 8-degree orb, and it's happening June 24th. And so you'll start to see a resurgence of all that Occupy movement. There will be a sense of like growing fear about the 2012 debacle. Mercury squaring Uranus at the beginning of June 11th here, when Jupiter enters Gemini, bodes well for bringing great astrological works into the world, Mercury, Uranus. So if you're writing anything astrological or metaphysical, the square will spur you on through the conflict for growth between Mercury, the urge to communicate, and Uranus, the urge for invention and authenticity, people. And then Pluto opposes, Mercury opposes Pluto as well on June 11th. I guess I could say Pluto opposes Mercury, but Mercury is the fast planet, so it's actually coming into opposition to Pluto. So Mercury is about, you know, with Pluto, it's about mental transformation and regeneration. So lots of change going on in the mind. Chiron's going retrograde June 12th, bringing great healing into the world. June 13th, June 12th makes a trine to Chiron, so great for educational new endeavors. Teaching students, learning courses, all that. Kicking in strong June 12th. And just continues Mercury making a 45-degree angle to Sirius June 13th. So mental abundance is in the air. Sun trines Saturn June 13th. And we already know the trine is the angle of creative expression and blending of energies. And where things come together with ease. Effortless action. Can turn into laziness if you don't use it. But usually the sun, as a creative force, and Saturn as an advisory force of wisdom, is about harnessing a blending of creative wisdom from the past and the future and uniting them in the present, June 13th. So that's a powerful alignment there, sun and Saturn. Mercury is also going to make a 45-degree angle to Jupiter, June 16th. 45-degree angles are crescents, I call them. And they bring agitation, but they also are about sowing seeds of conflict so that things can rise and grow. There's always a frustration about them because they rhyme with the lunation cycle, the eight phases. But sometimes it takes a little frustration to grow. It's kind of like when you're a baby, you first start walking. At first, it's tough. You take a step, you fall on your face. And you go, wow, this world hurts. And then, you know, gradually you learn to balance and you learn to do all the good stuff. Next thing you know, you're riding a bike. thinking you're cool. Next thing you know, you're driving a car, speeding down the road, thinking you're cool. Anyway, June 16th, Venus is going to square Chiron. So great healing and love. We just had this major new beginning in love for the next 8 years. I can't wait to see where love's going for me, because after every 8 years, going through a major breakup, and then this year coming into it single, it's like I finally defeated the cycle, or maybe the cycle defeated me. Maybe I learned my lesson. So I experienced my breakup 2 years ago, so I'm early. I'm early by 2 years. Had I not been broken up, I probably would have already. So under this transit, you know, the tensions would have been mounting. It would have been time for a new direction in love. But I'm glad I came into this one single, just like feeling open towards anything, as long as it's in line with my calling as an astrologer and a teacher. I'm down. Anything that stands in the way of that, if anything stands in the way of that, I just can't do that, you know, because my writing, and dissemination of astrological wisdom for this coming global renaissance beginning in 2020 with a Jupiter-Saturn conjunction at 1 degree Sabian symbol Aquarius is going to be amazing. And I'm very happy to be here on the planet to help bring in the global renaissance. So how can you become a renaissance man or woman? Because if you think about it, 8 years from now will be 2020. And that'll be the next big Venus cycle. I don't know if it'll be a transit, but I haven't looked that far ahead. But for sure, you know, bringing in the Venus-Sun energy around that time will be a powerful thing. So yeah, the end of the month is very, very much so about, right, the whole month of June is about communication. I mean, Jupiter's going into Gemini, Mercury's making the most aspects, it's moving into Cancer on June 7th, bringing our hearts into our verbiage. It's got, out of all this, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 aspects by the end of the month. Jeez. So, yeah, Mercury's going to be busy. It's always busy because it moves so fast. But in general, this is a great month for mercurial endeavors, which makes my inner writer very happy. So, this is Kelly Lee Phipps signing out for the Cosmic Weather. If you got any questions, you can always email me at kellyleephipps@gmail.com. Check me out on Facebook. I'm also going to be doing some Twittering and posting some videos. If you get a chance, check out that Building Bridges in Astrology video. And we'll see you next time under the new moon coming up, which will be also in Gemini. I think we're having 2 new moons in Gemini this year. It'll be at the end of Gemini. There's a lot of communication energies rising in the air right now. Anyway, Kelly out.